This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, a controversial proposal by California's governor to weed out bad teachers. A new law in Philadelphia requires ninth graders to learn about African American history. And is middle school an idea whose time has gone? Joining us from Nassau Broadcasting in Princeton, New Jersey, is student Jarrell Blakely, who will be entering Howard University in the fall. At member station WGUC in Cincinnati is Sharon Draper, 1997 National Teacher of the Year and author of the book Not Quite Burned Out, But Crispy Around the Edges, Inspiration, Laughter, and Encouragement for Teachers. And joining us from his home in Fresno, California, Joseph Jimenez, Regional Director with the Beginning Teacher Support and Assessment Program. Welcome. And let's get right to our first issue of the day. Now, I'm going to turn to you, Joseph.
Yes.
Governor Schwarzenegger, he's proposed this idea of reducing teachers' job protections, teacher tenure, some people call it. Now, the governor wants to extend the probation period for new teachers, change the rules for firing veterans who perform poorly. What is your opinion about that plan?
Well, 2 points. I think that it's kind of interesting that the governor is just looking at teachers, when I think that we need to be looking at all stakeholders and maybe providing some remediation or the ability to release not only teachers but administrators. I know there's some that sometimes get shuffled around. We have superintendents who receive hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy out their contracts if they are not fitting in with the culture of the school district. So I think that there are some things that we need to do, not just looking at teachers, but looking at all of the those involved with the education of our children. And secondly, it's interesting that we're kind of looking at a deficit, you know, getting rid of those who are not capable, when I think the larger issue is how are we developing quality teachers? How are we committed to developing leadership within the school community? And I think that might be something that we need to emphasize rather than just the deficits of getting rid of those who seem to be not fitting in.
Sharon, let me turn to you. You were a teacher of the year, and I think your book title says a lot, Not Quite Burned Out, But Crispy Around the Edges. What does it mean when good teachers really have hit the wall? Should those teachers be retrained, or should they just be let go?
I would suggest, first of all, that we focus on the good teachers. Those teachers always get ignored when we bring up this discussion, which is very politically popular, but doesn't really treat the situation that's actually happening in a school. There are so many absolutely wonderful, excellent teachers who are doing their jobs, whose students are passing the tests, who need to be supported and encouraged and rewarded. And if we focus more on those teachers and give them more support and give them more of what they need, we could help those teachers that are struggling or who are a little bit crispy on the end. We could also take that cadre of very strong, very good teachers and work with the new teachers as they are coming in to the profession. But politics ignores good teachers, only the teachers that are not performing well. We focus on the negatives rather than on the positives. And I want to make sure that all those teachers that need to be supported and encouraged and rewarded, that happens for them.
But Sharon, when push comes to shove, shouldn't school systems be able to fire bad teachers the same way that people are fired in jobs of many different types?
There are ways in place so that those teachers can be removed. There are also things in place so that those teachers can be retrained, can be supported, can be helped. Those few that cannot probably should leave the profession. I would not want my child to be taught by a teacher who did not care and who no longer had the skills to do what was necessary so that my child could learn. But I think if we would focus on retraining, reteaching, re-encouraging, re-inspiring those teachers that are on the borderline, on the edges, the number that need to be removed would be a lot smaller.
Jarrell, let me turn to you. You have survived high school, moving on to Howard University. In your experience, what did you see from your teachers? Did you see people who were happy to come into the classroom and serve you? Did you see people who were burnt out? Both. What do you as a student think of this whole issue of teacher tenure?
Well, personally, I believe that students Well, let's start from the top. I mean, I was looking at a statistic online from the State Office of Administrative Hearings in a Los Angeles Unified School District from 1990 to 1999. Only 13 dismissal panels were convened, and just one tenured teacher's case went through the dismissal process from beginning to end. I find it hard to fathom that there was only one bad teacher in the second largest school district in the country. The tenure process is so bureaucratic, and personally, I've had personal experience with teachers who, you know, basically say, I'm only teaching for the money. You guys can't get rid of me. I mean, I can recall quite vividly a particular teacher saying, you know, you guys can't get rid of me. And, you know, he just acted with impunity. And I think that, you know, if you look at any other job in, industry, almost none guarantee lifetime job security after only 2 years of competence. And the tenure process is so bureaucratic that, you know, it's kind of hard to get rid of bad teachers. It's so expensive. It's time-consuming. And the stat that I gave a second ago basically shows that it's really, really hard to get rid of bad teachers, and it should be a lot easier.
And let me turn back to you, Joseph.
Yeah.
The whole question here, you've been hearing from a student, obviously very well-versed on the topic, only one dismissal in that record that he found. I think Sharon's point is obviously very well taken, that there's not enough of a focus on good teachers. But how do you contextualize this whole move to end teacher tenure with everything that's going on in California? There's also a very contentious budget proposal that would cut the education budget in California. Would there be a bargain struck, you think, with California teachers would say, okay, well, yeah, we'll end teacher tenure, but we want X, Y, and Z. Is there going to be some process of bargaining in California to try to improve the education system, but are teachers willing to give on any of these points?
Well, you know, that is such a political hot button. I'm sure there's going to be some sort of agreements between the governor and the unions. But you know, that's the problem, I think, is that we're centering all this in a political arena, making decisions based upon political expediency and support rather than on what is best for our students. It seems to me that both the unions, all the stakeholders, unions, boards of education, the governor, all legislators, should be focusing on the student and what's best for them, not on the political leverage that they can gain by making a particular deal. That goes along with the suit that's going on with the union suing the governor over the funding. We need to break through those walls and pull education out of the political area and work for the benefit of our students. That is the most important aspect. And I don't understand why all our stakeholders can't come to the table and can't be focusing on that. On that aspect of teaching. And I would like to comment about Sharon's comment about having our excellent teachers helping the newer teachers in our beginning teacher and support and assessment program. That's exactly what we do. We're able to take our veteran teachers. We actually give them additional training and coaching techniques, working with adults, and link them with a new teacher. And that is paying great dividends for us in allowing us to grow some quality teachers, and at the same time, actually, in some cases, it actually pumps up the quality of our veteran teachers because now they see some of the little holes that they have in their own instruction. So I agree completely with Sharon that we need to be looking at our veteran teachers and how they can help us grow our younger teachers.
I want to move on to a couple more topics in the roundtable today. First off, middle school. Some research suggests that students really lose their way when they move from a smaller elementary school classroom to a larger middle school one. How do you think, Sharon, and I'll go to you, how do you think school should be structured in terms of how children progress from different types of schools to the next? My mother was a middle school teacher. She's now retired, but you know, she told me a lot of stories. The kids are old enough to get into a lot of trouble and young enough not to necessarily make the best judgment calls. Is there an alternative, for example?
I have taught in all configurations of schools, And I think if you stay in education long enough, every 20 years, there's a new wave of this is the way that this is going to work. I've been through schools with walls and without walls, block scheduling and traditional scheduling, middle school, junior high, high school. So I don't think it's the combination of age groups that we put together. But I think what's more important is the way that the school is done. If we have a middle school where the kids are just warehoused and there's no support, there's no nurturing, there's nothing that can help them to grow as individuals as well as learn the academic materials, then that school is going to fail. If you have a K-8 configuration with the same problems, you have bearded eighth graders in a building with five-year-olds, which is not good. So each of them have their negatives. I think if we focus on the strengths within a school, I think the small school concept is excellent. I think the teaming concept is excellent. And if we have smaller contingencies so that the teachers get to know the students, know who they are, know how that they function in academically as well as socially, that the K-8 school can be extremely successful and the middle school can be successful, the junior high can be successful, but it depends on the grouping of the students, the teaming of the students, and the focus on their academic and social needs.
Jarrell, what about you? You know, what kind of middle school or junior high school did you go to? What sorts of issues do you think that the students could have used help with, and who could have provided that?
Well, you know, I believe that the transition between fifth and sixth grade was just really, really difficult. I went to a traditional middle school, sixth through eighth, and I just totally think that that concept can be worked on. While I was on the Board of Education in Trenton, most of the issues we were dealing with were in terms of test scores, in terms of safety, in terms of, you know, a lot of issues, we focused on middle school. That transition between elementary school to middle school is just harsh. Like dealing with, you know, sixth grade, you have a lot more freedom, more classes, more teachers. And I just think that the blow can be lessened if we went to a K through eighth school. It just seems like teachers are, in those particular settings, are a lot more comfortable with the students, and there's a better relationship. Just that jump is just too stark. It's just a little too hard to jump from fifth to sixth.
And Joseph, let me ask you, you're working with new teachers trying to develop their skills. Yeah. One of the things that I've heard from many different teachers is that they are expected, particularly in middle school, to be social workers, not just to be teachers. They have to deal with kids whose parents may have substance abuse problems, kids who are beginning to have sex. All of these issues are really coming into play in the middle school years. What do you tell your new teachers about how to deal with some of these bigger social issues?
Well, I think that, to be quite frank, after 10 years at the middle school as a teacher, I can tell you that the middle school student is quite a little bit crazy because of the hormones that course through their body. However, with our new teachers, we have to let them know that they're teaching the whole person. And if there are issues that get in the way of their learning, then we must deal with those issues. And, you know, just to say, well, the student is here in my class, I have a subject to teach, I think those are the kinds of teachers who really don't belong at the middle school level. There's a certain quality to an effective middle school teacher that recognizes the challenges of that student, who recognizes, as Jarrell said, the transitional problems that exist and are willing to work with that child. Mm-hmm. I think the middle school years are more about the social, more about attitudes than, quite frankly, than it is the content. And we need to address those social issues.
And I wanted to just throw out one last topic. We only have a little bit of time, so if you can be brief. I'm going to just stay with you, Joseph.
Sure.
African-American history, a requirement in high school in Philadelphia. That's the first public school district to make African-American history a requirement, mandatory for ninth graders. It's a separate class, not included in American history courses. First off, do you think California needs to institute mandatory classes in ethnic history? And should this type of history be included in the typical history classes, or should it be a separate class?
Well, I think there's no doubt that the African American history, along with the Native American, the Hispanic cultures, all those cultures need to be included, and our children need to understand the richness that exists in California and all over the United States. In California, we have specific standards by which the teachers must address in order to receive a final clear professional credential, and one of those is to look at the cultures of their students and to address their specific needs and to recognize and build upon the cultural backgrounds of the students so that they can be more successful.
I'm going to have to just jump in and
Sure. Give
Sharon and Jarell a chance to comment. Sharon, do you think that there need to be more classes like this, or should the history books be rewritten to include ethnic history?
I think we need to have these classes. There's not enough room in the history books. In history classes, we used to get as far as World War II. An awful lot has happened since World War II, and there's not enough time to teach the American history necessary from September to June. So a separate class is in ethnic history and culture is absolutely essential in our 21st century world.
Jarell, briefly.
I totally agree. Students should get all aspects of American history. Understanding the African-American experience in this country is crucial to understanding many crucial concepts in American history, from Reconstruction to the Civil War to the Harlem Renaissance to the American Revolution. Understanding the African-American experience is so important and crucial that I think it deserves a class because, like the previous speaker said, you cannot, basically get the whole story about American history in a traditional U.S. History 2 class or a traditional U.S. History 1 class.
All right, I'm going to have to leave it there. You get the last word. Jarell Blakely is a student entering Howard University in the fall. He's in Princeton, New Jersey. Sharon Draper is the author of Not Quite Burned Out, But Crispy Around the Edges, Inspiration, Laughter, and Encouragement for Teachers from Cincinnati and from Fresno, California. Joseph Jimenez, Regional Director with the Beginning Teacher Support and Assessment Program. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.